everyone. This is D-Town, and I'm your host, Anahit Gürcan. Welcome to Deloitte Audit and Assurance Capture Team's very own monthly podcast series. Every month, I'm joined by someone from our organization or beyond it to answer my three questions. On each episode of the series, I set out to explore a vital topic around audit capture, relationship building, or succeeding on the market. I've been receiving many positive feedbacks on D-Town, and as we're growing more and more popular, I want to bring you people and topics to craft an even better show. So don't hesitate, get in touch with me and let me know who you would want to hear in the coming episodes. My guest today is Alexander Reutinger. Alexander sees himself as a change facilitator who supports people and organizations in the process of renewing themselves. He has a PhD in economics, spent several years in strategy consulting, and then assumed several managerial positions in financial services, always with a focus on doing things differently than they were before. Alexander also is a lecturer on leadership and change management, working with young leaders, and also he's a certified coach and team coach. Today, Alexander will talk to me about implementing change, building trust, and change resistance. Listen until the end, as we will close with a book recommendation, a teaser for the next episode, and my very special Did You Know That piece. Alexander, welcome to D-Town. Thank you so much for being here today. It's great to have you.
I'm very happy to be here, Anahit.
So now, are you ready for the three questions?
I'm ready.
So let's go. When we talk about implementing change, be it change of mindset or new structure within an organization, how do you ensure that the change is well accepted by all stakeholders? So basically, how do you get people on board?
Well, I think a mistake that is often made is that there is too much focus when we talk about stakeholders on the CEO or on the members of the executive committee or other top managers of an organization. The elevator pitch is a classical tool for such a purpose. So you have only a very limited time to engage a top manager, and you want to bring him or her on board with regard to your initiative or project. And then the top management seems to be most important, but in fact, it often anyway has a strong interest in a successful change initiative. They might even have formally signed up to it in their own MBOs. And furthermore, you might even get more attention or input from them if you neglect them a little bit as part of the stakeholder management, because then they get curious and say, where are you? What's going on? So from my own experience, I can say that a true stakeholder management needs to be mostly done with the lower ranking employees, often those who initially have nothing to do with a change initiative or a project, but ultimately are those needed in order to make the change stick. This is not even because they need to do something specific as a part of a project or a change, or need to change themselves dramatically. It is just because they represent the organization's mood and the attitude, and the way they think and feel and talk about the change is crucial in making the change ultimately stick. So doing the small talk in front of the coffee machine or in the canteen is really the key of successful stakeholder management. So you could call it the canteen pitch, for example.
Thank you. That was very, very interesting and actually new to me. So what is your number one advice for building trust or earning trust so that your colleagues follow your lead?
Good question. I guess we all subscribe to the statement that we will be trusted when we are also able to give trust. However, that's easier said than done. Giving trust is not really just a logical decision made by the brain. It's neither a strategic or a tactical measure. It's rather inside of us, deep inside of us. How do we relate to people we don't know so well, for example? In a situation where high stakes are involved. So our ability and willingness to give trust is strongly influenced by our upbringing and our context. A mentor of mine once said, before you give trust, you need to have some evidence that this is justified. Otherwise, you're just naive and take too much of a risk. And while that's fine and somehow logical, it makes it even harder to ultimately get to providing trust, because there's no switch you can just flip and say, now I trust. It's not only the brain that needs to be on board. There's a lot of emotion and heart that needs to be involved as well. So I think that ultimately the best way to start trusting, and therefore to be able to receive trust from others, is to engage others in a conversation around what's important for you so that you can trust me. And I will tell you what's important for me so that I am able to trust you. And such conversations, such open conversations about what's important in a relationship, they can not only improve trust, they can also be the basis for all sorts of powerful conversations around what's needed for a good collaboration.
That is very insightful. Thank you, Alex. And my third question about change management or change as such. So how do you tackle change resistance?
That's a tough one indeed. Resistance is always tough. What I often see, and what is surely not helpful, is to categorize people into the supporters of change and the resistors of change. And then I read that you need a critical mass of say 20% or 40% or 60% of supporters, however these numbers are calculated. I'm convinced this is way too simplistic in order to confront the complexities of an organization's staff body. So every one of us has certain reasons to change, and every one of us has certain reasons to resist. So what we need to do is less to define who is good and who is bad, but rather we need to influence this balance of reasons within the individual members of an organization. When we start from there, we then also drop the prejudices towards those who seemingly resist. They're not fundamentally different people. It's just that their internal balance looks differently given the specific context. This then allows to investigate how to positively tweak this individual balance towards required change, understanding that we all only like change when we somehow benefit from it. So we must understand the incentive structure of an individual and then find ways to adapt these incentives, sometimes only slightly. By the way, I think what's important is to note that change resistors perform a very crucial role in each organization because they are those who push back at too much activism. And there are many studies that show that one of the reasons of a widespread change failure is indeed a management that is invested in too many initiatives at the same time, which then brings the cost of a lack of focus.
There are some very, very interesting topics we touched upon, or actually you touched upon, Alex. And I know I said there will be three questions, but now that I have you on the spot, I have one last one. And this is something that really interests me personally. So what is the most interesting thing you've revealed from your experience as a coach?
Great question. I didn't expect that one. The most interesting thing is it's a learning about myself. I think from my background, I have for a long time been an advisor, someone who is there to help people by giving them arguments, reasons, solutions, solve their problems, help them by providing them suggestions. And when going towards the coaching track, I needed to stop that. I needed to kind of take a step back and rather facilitate the process for people to find their own solutions. So limiting myself to asking open questions that allows other people to come up with their own answers. Which, and this is also something that I have experienced since, which are much better answers than the one that I could ever provide as an advisor.
Thank you so much. This is really very interesting, and I really appreciate you taking the time and being here and talking to us on these topics.
Thank you, Anna. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. Next month, I will be joined for the second time now by Peter Sani, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. Did you know that? Only action creates change, and for leaders to lead the change, they need to learn and practice the tools and change the internal and external environments. Actions and their outcomes will determine the quality of your leadership. Building relationships, developing others, and engaging people in turning your vision into reality will build your reputation as a leader. I want to conclude this episode by talking about a book that I read this month. It is The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay Stanier. It is a very fast read and at the same time, very powerful. It is centered around 7 great questions to help any conversation go from small talk to output. The questions are well thought out and solve real problems. For example, when people spiral negatively, you ask them, what's the real challenge for you here, to take them back up? And when they're not generating enough options, you ask them, and what else? The big takeaway from this book is that it's not your job as a coach to offer solutions. It's your job to ask the questions that lead to solutions, which is in essence coaching. And another very useful thing about the book, it offers many references for great management and leadership literature. This was Dtown. Thanks for listening. I will see you next month.